Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Classic FM. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, country, rock, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the websites IPR and High Definition Pro. Question number one, since a cantata is a musical piece that is sung, what would be an example of its opposite? That is, a musical piece that is only played. Hint, this type of music has also been defined as a quote-unquote symphony for a solo instrument. So, would an example of that be A, Dvorak's String Quartet No. 4? Would it be B, Tchaikovsky's The Nutcracker? Would it be C, Mozart's Requiem in D minor? Or would it be D, Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata? So what would be an example of a symphony for solo instrument? And question number two, are CDs an example of an analog or a digital audio recording? Is it A, analog, B, digital, C, both, D, neither one? CDs, how are they classified anyway? The answers to these two important questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of July 21st. Well, it was on this very day back in 1933 that Katharina Jarborough became the first black prima donna of a U.S. opera company. She sang Aida at the Metropolitan Opera House in New York City, 1933, today. And it was 54 years ago today, 1969, that Duke Ellington and a portion of his band performed a 10-minute composition on ABC TV titled Moon Maiden. The event took place just one day after Neil Armstrong became the first man to set foot on the moon, today in 1969. And in classical music news, we have this article entitled, Google Taught a Virtual Bird How to Play the Cello. Kinda. Make classical music in Viola the Bird. This is written by Rob Rich on the 12th of July, 2023, in LifeWire, yahoo.com. Remember the blobs? Well, they've shape-shifted and picked up instrumental skills, and they're still a fun way to waste some time. Google Arts and Culture Lab is combining strange animals with classical music yet again with a new bird-centric digital performing arts experiment. The creator of the Blob Opera, David Lee, is back with a new concept. What if a bird played the cello, resulting in Viola the Bird? An AI-trained program that turns cursor movements into violin and cello notes to generate real-time music with a fluffy bird on the strings. Lee collaborated with a number of other artists, musicians, and a couple of arrangers to bring viola to life virtually. They all worked together to train a neural network on musical compositions as played by both the cello and the violin. That network was then used to create an audio synthesis engine that creates musical notes as you drag your mouse cursor to the left and right of the screen. Dragging the cursor around will also cause viola to move around, using her head to push and pull the cello's bow. How fast or slow you move the cursor will affect how drawn out or quick the notes are, and while it's not possible to lose when playing, varying speeds can lead to some interesting results. There are quite a few classical melodies to play around with, too, from Beethoven's Ode to Joy to Rossini's William Tell Overture. If you'd rather watch and listen, you can try out demo mode. Or if you prefer to compose your own tunes, there's also a freestyle mode available. You can try out Viola the Bird for yourself right now through Google Arts and Culture at no cost. All you need is a web browser and mouse or trackpad. And in music research and technology, we have this article titled, The History of the Digital Organ and Sampling, written by Stephen A. Markowitz on the 5th of April 2020 in AllenOrgan.com. Throughout industries, there are examples of individuals that change the larger world. Some are well known, while others focused on their trade and avoided publicity. In the electronic keyboard industry, my father, Jerome Markowitz, not only invented the first fully electronic organ, but decades later would be responsible for the introduction of the world's first musical instrument utilizing digital sampling. This is a history of how vision, ingenuity, and dedication, along with willingness to take on risk, would change the way electronic musical sounds are produced, with implications far beyond the organ market. Digital sound is now ubiquitous, a part of all sound-producing products. However, not long before the advent of CDs and MP3s, all sound was created through analog technology. Remarkably, the roots of digital sound production emanated within the niche church organ field from a small company located in Pennsylvania, USA. In 2021, it will be 50 years since the world's first digital musical instrument was offered for sale. The development and commercialization of this revolutionary technology is a remarkable story of one man's dedication to creating electronic instruments of the highest fidelity. In a sense, the impetus behind the technology that would lead to the digital organ and digital sound production was set in motion by President John F. Kennedy, who in 1961 declared, quote-unquote, "First, I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal, before this decade is out, of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the earth." The technology required to meet this ambitious goal had not yet been developed. There were technological hurdles that had to be overcome before NASA could fulfill Kennedy's vision. One was the miniaturization of computers so that complex calculations, such as telemetry, could be made by astronauts in real time on the Apollo capsule. In 1961, a computer capable of such calculations weighed thousands of pounds. It had to be miniaturized to the size of a small trash can, requiring significant advancements in large-scale integrated circuits, LSI, technology. The American aerospace company tasked with resolving this challenge was North American Rockwell. In 1966, 3 years before the first American would land on the moon, Rockwell understood that America's spending on the Apollo program would wane in a few years. To offset this inevitable revenue loss, Rockwell's management created a strategic plan for the company to utilize the advanced technology it developed for the space program in commercial products. These products would then require Rockwell's LSI circuits and create a longer-term revenue stream. As the home organ business was booming in the mid-1960s, an idea spawned by one Rockwell scientist was to use digital technology to produce organ sounds. Since Rockwell had no organ or music expertise, it needed a joint venture with an organ manufacturer to co-develop the digital organ. The plan was that Rockwell would supply the technology and LSI expertise and circuits, with the organ company supplying the musical and business expertise. Rockwell contacted all the major American home organ manufacturers, including Hammond, Kahn, and Wurlitzer, proposing a joint venture. While these companies were interested in the revolutionary technology, they were unwilling to invest in it. As a last-ditch effort to save the project, Rockwell contacted a small organ manufacturer, Allen Organ Company, founded by Jerome Markowitz in 1937, which had always been on the cutting edge of analog sound technology. In the early 1930s, there was only one electric organ, the Hammond organ. It was compact and inexpensive compared to pipe organs, which intrigued Jerome. However, the Hammond's electromechanical tone generation system could only create sounds appropriate for popular music. It could not produce sounds required for classical or liturgical music. My father then decided to dedicate his life to producing pipe organ sounds through electronic tone production means. By 1967, Jerome Markowitz was the world's premier analog tone generation engineer. As a visionary, he immediately understood the revolutionary potential of digital tone generation, later called sampling. Cohesive ensembles made the pipe organ the king of instruments. This was also a requirement for a successful digital organ. Digital sampling begins with recording pipes with this information, ultimately stored in the organ for playback. Jerome spent months experimenting with different means to record organ pipes for sampling. To create pure pipe sounds, Jerome learned that the microphone needed to be placed very close to each pipe, which also offered the optimal signal-to-noise ratio for the recordings. This dry sampling technique, which Allen continues to use to this day, allows the digital sounds to be individually voiced as a pipe technician needs to voice individual pipes. This process leads to the grand ensembles found in the fine pipe organs. Thanks to my father's dreams, vision, and dedication, Allen Organ Company was the innovator for both the analog and digitally sampled organs. Music and the instruments that helped create it have been a significant part of humanity since long before the advent of digital technology, but digital technology has played a crucial role in the advancement of man's expression of music during the last half century. And in local music news, We have this article entitled, Why the Village People's Cowboy, a Raleigh Native, Will Never Tire of YMCA. Written by Josh Schaefer, July 17, 2023, News and Observer. In 1977, Randy Jones found himself in New York's white-hot disco scene, performing as a backup dancer for Grace Jones of Studio 54 notoriety. Sporting a Marlboro Man mustache and wearing what can only be described as a thong made from leather and chains, he'd come a long way since Enloe High School in Raleigh, where he starred as King Arthur in Camelot. But that night, New York, in the glitter and flash of party lights, destiny dropped like a giant gift bag, delivered a life with 100 million records sold. As Jones moved from stage to dressing room, a pair of music producers with French accents approached him and raved, "We like the way you look. We like the mustache. We're very curious. Would you like to be in a group?" Jones, who was 25 at the time, ignored the ambiguity in their question and agreed, launching his career as the cowboy in the Village People and forever linking himself to YMCA, perhaps America's best-known song. But he had one condition. "I would like to meet in the daytime," he said, "in an office with some clothes on." Now 71, Jones has told that story as many times as a disco ball has mirrors, and he'll tell it again starting July 27 as a featured star at Galaxy Con, Raleigh's annual collection of celebrity cult heroes, where he'll don his trademark hat and gab with fans. Some cultural phenomena, like YMCA, played at a ballpark, are immune to repetition. "I have not heard that song enough," Jones told the NNO. "Every time it's played, somebody puts money in my checking account. Since 1977, my life has been wonderful. My life has been blessed." Jones, raised on country western music, chose his outfit deliberately. The cowboy and the independence he projects, the solitude, the dependability. Within months of that audition, he and the Village People were dancing on American Bandstand, singing on the Merv Griffin Show, beaming into living rooms whose dad smoked pipes, moms sipped cocktails, and kids ate off of TV trays. Even the Muppets performed Macho Man. "We appealed to people first because of our charm or our charisma or the fact we weren't offensive," Jones said. "We weren't saying dirty words. We were singing songs they could sing along to and remember little earworms." And while Greenwich Village had the reputation as a gay neighborhood, the Village People found near universal appreciation. Jones called it the band's legacy, far beyond YMCA getting played at every wedding, bar mitzvah, and seventh-inning stretch. That family watching the Village People on Merv Griffin got a glimpse of performers they might have shunned out of reflexive prejudice if they weren't so dang catchy, and they maybe found a little humanity by accident. He knows that legacy endures because 14 Major League Baseball teams play the Village People's signature tune for home games and because the checks keep coming in the mail. But more than anything, after 40-plus years, Jones could stand in the middle of a crowd, throw his hands in the air, and bust out his famous chorus, and everybody within earshot from 9 to 90 would transform into a smiling letter Y. So few people knew that the Enloe alumnus, who founded its drama club, will always trade on the Village People. The over-the-top disco dancing group consisting of six men, costumed as American male stereotypes. Jones's cowboy, a Native American dressed in a war bonnet, a biker sporting leather and a U-shaped mustache, a construction worker in hard hat and mirrored shades, a GI in fatigues, and a singing policeman, all of them stemming from the Greenwich Village club scene, hence the name. So how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our second question, are CDs an example of an analog or a digital audio recording? Is it A, analog, B, digital, C, both, or D, neither one? Correct answer is answer B. CDs are examples of digital audio. As noted in a March 11, 2019 article in High Definition Pro by Vincent T. titled The Analog versus Digital Debate, analog audio consists of a continuous signal with varying voltages that represent sound directly from the source. The vibrations produced to create those sounds are precisely what is recorded. That may include some noise and echo as well, but that can be eliminated by signal conditioning equipment. In analog recording, the sound is directly recorded to media in the form of magnetic tape. In a recording studio, this is called the master tape, and it is then distributed to reproduce the original recording. Analog recording equipment that is typically used consists of a microphone, mixers, and cables. Vinyl records, cassette tapes, and 8-track are examples of analog distribution media. Digital audio encodes the sound into discrete signals. It only has two voltage states to represent audio, a 0, no voltage, and a 1, presence of voltage, called a bit. A series of bits make up the audio and are stored in magnetic or solid-state formats. Digital recording uses analog equipment to record the audio, but it is then encoded using digital equipment. The audio is digitized in a process called analog-to-digital conversion, ADC, and then distributed to more popular formats like CD, DVD, or streamed over the Internet. So music is really a combination of both analog and digital techniques. In the past, before digital, audio recording was more complicated and difficult. Digital equipment made it easier to produce and edit audio, as well as distribute it as content. Live streaming is popular today among musicians on Internet platforms, and almost anyone can do this today. Before that, the only way musicians could play live music was by broadcasting on TV or radio. Not everyone had access to a station where they can play, unlike today, where any musician can stream live from their internet connection. If the recording uses any form of compression, like an MP3 format, the quality of the audio decreases. Compression of the original audio is used to save storage space on media or to improve bandwidth on a network. There are well-recorded digital formats like CD and DVD, which do not lose as much quality because they have a different encoding method. Thus, a CD will have a closer level of quality to analog sound. With analog media like cassette tapes and vinyl records, maintenance is the key to preserve the audio quality. This is because these media formats are susceptible to dust, mildew, molds, and dirt that can degrade the quality of the audio. Finally, it doesn't matter if you have more preference for analog or digital. DJs and music producers today use a combination of both analog and digital recording and playback systems. The quality ultimately boils down to the superiority of the recording and sound equipment. And the answer to our first question, since a cantata is a musical piece that is sung, what would be an example of its opposite, a musical piece that is only played? Hint, this type of music also has been defined as a quote-unquote symphony for a solo instrument. Would that be A, Dvorak String Quartet No. 4? No, that's an example of chamber music. Would it be B, Tchaikovsky's The Nutcracker? No, that's an example of a ballet music format. How about C, Mozart's Requiem in D minor? No, that's an example of a music format called a mass. Or would it be D, Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata? Yes, the correct answer is answer D, Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. As noted in Classical Music 101, All About Formats by Iowa Public Radio and IPR, on the 12th of June 2020, if cantata is a piece that is sung, the opposite would be a sonata, or a piece that is played. Sonatas are small-scale works that typically have a soloist and sometimes a piano accompaniment. They have several movements, but at least one of these movements, typically the first, last, or both, have to be in sonata form. Sonata form has three parts to establish key relationships: the exposition, development, and recapitulation. Symphonies and concertos typically also have movements in sonata form. Chopin wrote a lot of piano sonatas, and the second movement of his Sonata No. 2 in B flat minor is an extremely well-known funeral march. So let's terminate today's transmission with the opposite of a cantata. Here's Beethoven's Piano Sonata No. 14. 5 years after Beethoven's death in 1827, German poet and music critic Ludwig Rellstab compared the effect of the first movement of this three-movement sonata to moonlight shining on Lake Lucerne. The work is now popularly known as Moonlight Sonata. For today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words: kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time.